Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
A report has shown that transplants have fallen slightly, having failed to return to pre-pandemic levels. So what impact does this have on those on the transplant list? Well, I'm joined on the line by Maureen O'Donnell, CEO with Irish Lung Fibrosis Association. Maureen, you're very welcome.
Thanks very much, Claire, for having me. I appreciate this opportunity.
And why do you think the transplant numbers have not recovered since the pandemic?
Yep. So first, if I could just tell you a little bit about lung fibrosis and the people that are on the transplant waiting list with lung fibrosis. It is a life-limiting disease. It's a progressive disease. It's a very serious disease. It affects people generally over the age of 50. And transplant becomes the very last option for them when all other medical options are failing. It is literally the gift of life for them. And so it's very important in that situation for them to have access and the ability to have transplants. What happened with transplants is there was kind of this high period in the late 20-teens when, from a lung perspective, they were doing in the low 30s as an average across per year. So they'd be there anywhere from 30 to 38 in 2019. Now, just to give you an indication how many people are on the waiting list, Peter Conlon, who is the head of the Organ Donation Transplant Ireland, ODTI, he's the clinical lead, he said there's around 30 currently waiting for lung transplants. When the pandemic hit, the numbers basically fell through the floor. They dropped by 50%. They were down to 16 in 2020. They did a tiny little bit of a recovery, 2021, 22, 23, but then they've fallen through the floor again. So right now, lung transplants are at half. In 2025, they were at half of what they were from that high in 2019.
And even with the opt-in, does that mean when it gets to hospital stage, are families saying no? Do we know that data?
So let me just say, you know, when you're doing 15 a year, if there's 30 on the waiting list, that means it's going to take you, if you do the math, 2 years to get a transplant. Lung fibrosis patients do not have that time to be able to wait. Now, in terms of is this an issue of not enough donations or is this an issue of the system, we would argue that the Irish people are incredibly generous when it comes to organ donation. They are making a decision that I cannot imagine having to make when you lose a family member, having to decide to go ahead and donate those organs and give somebody else life. That is an incredibly difficult thing to do, and I do not envy them that decision. There are a number of people who have chosen to opt out, but Ireland is in line with other countries in terms of the percentage of the population that opt out. And I would argue that if you cannot have trust in the system and the system is not providing transparency and the system is not ensuring that that organ is going to be used to give someone else life, of course you're going to be a little bit hesitant. So our argument is, yeah, donations are a problem. The Human Tissue Act was an excellent step forward, but it is the system of transplantation that has fallen apart since COVID and has not yet recovered.
Stay on the line. That's Maureen O'Donnell there, from the CEO of Irish Lung Fibrosis Association, because I want to bring in Gillian McNulty, a cystic fibrosis campaigner. Gillian, you're very welcome.
Good afternoon, Claire. Thank you.
You had your transplant in 2022, so you can echo everything that Maureen said about how life-changing it truly is.
Oh, it is such a precious gift. I received my kidney transplant this month 4 years ago, and it has been life-changing. I mean, I was the first person with cystic fibrosis and my own non-transplanted lungs to end up in kidney failure, on dialysis, and ultimately get on the transplant list and receive my kidney. I mean, before I got my kidney, my weight was at 37 kilos. I was just living. Dialysis was keeping me alive. And I've never looked back once I received my precious gift. And I always honour my precious donor and their family for giving me a chance at living life. And it's made such a huge difference to me. It's just like night and day. I am now healthy. I am not sick as much as I used to be. It's such an amazing gift. You know, and I do urge people to have the conversation with their families or their friends and really think, if they want to opt out, to really think, do they really want to do this? Because nobody knows what tomorrow brings. Nobody knows what anyone in the family is going to wake up to tomorrow, if they're going to need an organ, if they're going to go into liver failure, kidney failure, if something's going to happen. You know what I mean? And I just urge people to have that conversation, because it is so important and it is literally life changing.
And do you think it comes down to that, Gillian? Because I actually think you're right. It's the taboo of the death discussion, and nobody wants to sit at the dinner table on a Sunday and say, can we talk about organ donation? And yet it's very important, because as Maureen said, the topic then comes up at potentially a hugely difficult time in a family's life, when they have a family member who is in a hospital and then they're asked about organ donation. Whereas if you had that conversation around the dinner table that Sunday, they have that to lean on.
It's not going to be such a shock. Yes. And I mean, I think a lot of people think it's insensitive when some of their family obviously is sick in hospital and their organs could actually be used to save someone's life. And it does seem like it's insensitive, but that's obviously the job of the transplant coordinators and of people that are desperately clinging for a second chance at life. So it's really, really important. And it doesn't have to be a negative conversation. Like, one person can save up to 8 lives. And if people have these conversations, there'll be no blurred lines.
Yeah.
Everyone will know, you know what I mean? And then it'll be automatically, yes, they know why the transplant coordinator is coming in. They know the wishes of their loved one. And it just makes everything so much more transparent for everybody involved.
Yeah. And if you don't feel like having the conversation, just throw it up in the family WhatsApp group right now and just say it.
Exactly.
That they are your wishes. Gillian, stay on the line there. I want to bring in Robert. Robert, you had a heart transplant in 2007.
Yes, I had a heart transplant in 2007.
Tell us about that time in your life.
Well, it was a very difficult time for me personally, and obviously for my family as well. I had a heart attack on the golf course, as you do, and it caused so much damage to my native heart muscle that my only chance of life was a heart transplant. Otherwise, my life expectancy was less than 1 year. So it was a very difficult time, being oxygen dependent, full time in hospital in the coronary care unit. Very difficult time for my wife and my daughter.
What age were you at the time, Robert?
I had 3 weeks after, I had my heart attack 3 weeks after my 50th birthday.
Wow. So obviously a big shock, as you say, for all concerned. And a heart transplant is obviously a massive operation. So how did that come about, that the transplant became something that was a reality, was going to happen?
Well, as I'd said, Claire, following my hospitalisation, I was full-time in the coronary care unit. My consultant told me my only chance of life was a transplant. So I was put on the active heart transplant list. And in the time waiting, I just had to keep myself as well as possible until the opportunity of a transplant arose.
So they said that there was a heart available?
Well, I was waiting. Ultimately, I was relatively fortunate. I was 5 months on the active transplant list, Claire. So all that time, I was just waiting until one Saturday evening. The transplant coordinator from the Mater Hospital came to tell me at 11 p.m. at night that there was the possibility of a heart transplant.
And do you get given any information, Robert, about the donor, or is that something you would have liked, or how did you navigate through the whole thing?
So what happens post-transplant is all communication is through the coordinators, Claire. So just to extenuate what people have said there earlier, this was life-affirming for me, Claire. So I am now 19 years post-transplant, have been very well, have been very fortunate. And, you know, as of this morning, Claire, my youngest granddaughter starts primary school. So I would not have seen any of these life experiences without what my donor and his family did for me. So we have no communication. We have sent our thanks over the years through the transplant coordinator. but you have no direct contact with the donor family.
Yeah.
And opportunities like today give us the opportunity to discuss organ donation, you know, reaffirm that organ donation saves lives, and to highlight the benefit of organ donation.
Just incredible. Robert, thank you for sharing your story with us today. A texter says, I've had 3 kidney transplants over the last 30 years. I'm so happy and unbelievably appreciative of my donors for giving me the gift of life, just as Robert and Gillian had to say. I like the new opt-in since June 2025, but I totally respect those who opt out. It's their own personal decision. And Jennifer texted in and said, I opted out of organ donation because my body will be donated to medical science, so I feel like I'm still helping. Jennifer, you are certainly doing your bit. I want to bring in Colin White, the National Advocacy Manager of the Irish Kidney Association. Colin, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much, Claire.
It's just incredible to hear Gillian and Robert talk about how organ donation literally saved their lives and the life experience that Robert can still have 19 years on after his heart transplant. When you read the figures that say transplants have not returned to pre-pandemic levels, does it worry you?
It does, to be honest, because when you realise what can be achieved, as Robert and Gillian have so outlined so well, you kind of feel that there's missed opportunities. There's so much potential out there. At the Irish Kidney Association, we have an annual service of remembrance and thanksgiving. It'll be on in November this year. And it brings together donor families and transplant recipients from down through the years. And it's been going for more than 40 years now. And it's a great opportunity for the community to come together and say to the donor families that we see you, we thank you, and we very much appreciate you. And I think it's a conversation we can all have. As you've said, it's not a typical dinner time conversation, but that was one of the motivations behind the development of the organ donor card, that it's a nice little icebreaker for starting that conversation. That's why it has a space on the back of it for your next of kin to sign. So if your listeners would go on to ika.ie/donor card, they can either request a donor card to be sent by post, or they can even download a donor card to the digital wallet on their phone and then share it in the family WhatsApp group as a way of making sure their wishes are known.
Yeah, that's a lovely way to do it. There's a texter here, Colin, who says, there should be a change to the system. If you opt out of donating organs, you should not be allowed to receive organs if you need them. You simply can't have it both ways. Opt out, then can't receive. Well, what do you think of that idea?
I can understand the sentiment, but I think you're going down a slippery slope, that if we start challenging people's kind of decisions or attitudes, where does it stop?
Yeah.
In relation to medical treatment, like do we say someone who smokes shouldn't get any health treatment, somebody who eats the wrong foods? I absolutely get the sentiment, but I think it is a bit of a slippery slope that we should avoid.
Well, Colin White from the National, who is the National Advocacy Manager of the Irish Kidney Association. Thank you very much for coming on. And can I give you a book recommendation? It's called Story of a Heart by a journalist called Rachel Clark. And it's about a heart transplant between 2 children in the UK. And that does not sound like something you would want to read, but it is the most amazing true story. And it really goes through the entire process, the families, the peoples involved, the professionals involved in organ transplant and donation, and is an incredibly life-affirming read. I can't recommend it enough. It's called Story of a Heart, and Robert told the story beautifully there too. If someone has opted out, they should never be allowed to receive an organ should they need one, says another. It should work both ways. I thought Colin White from the IKA answered that really well. And I opted out, says another, because if I go tomorrow, my healthy lung, liver, whatever, could end up in the body of a smoker, drinker, or whatever. I will go out with everything I came in with. Well, you can text in your thoughts on that one. You can email lunchtimelive@newstalk.com, or the text number, WhatsApp, is 087 1400 106.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on Newstalk. Conversation that counts.